It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite tea-bagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour, and what a special show we have for you today. Today's theme is troublemakers. And a little later on the show, we're going to be talking to Ann Bernhard, who's been causing a lot of trouble on YouTube with her video that goes after Lindsey Graham for suggesting that Americans who say anything that incite Muslim violence should be held accountable. But first, the queen of the troublemakers, Christine O'Donnell. Christine ran what was probably the most sensational campaign in American history back in 2010, shocking the Republican Party and America and showing the strength of the Tea Party movement. She's here today to talk to us about her new book entitled, appropriately enough, Troublemakers. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mark. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, I think we got a sense of the Tea Party's true power whenever you won the primary back in 2010. I think you shocked America, and based on the response, you kind of shocked the Republican establishment as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I love to say the former Republican leaders in Delaware, because they've since been ousted of their leadership posts.
Great.
You know, but they were angry, and they still are angry. They're trying to attack the book and, you know, putting out all this kind of rhetoric because they can't stand it. But I'll tell you, Mark, I wrote the book in such a way that I hope is honest about mistakes I've made, or like this stupid witch ad, how I didn't listen to my gut. I knew that that wasn't right, but I listened to the establishment's chosen vendor, and I take full responsibility for that. But I do it in such a way that I hope is inspirational and motivational to the reader, because I believe the Tea Party is at a crossroads. As I've been doing different interviews on my book tour, people are saying, you know, but the Tea Party caused this paralysis in Washington, as if we caused the debt. We caused these deficits. This problem was going on long before the Tea Party movement emerged, and I think what's happening is we're holding the leaders, the career politicians in Washington who've turned Congress into a favor factory, we're holding them accountable. So they're trying to push back and discredit us. And the reason why I say I wrote it in the way that I did is because we have to decide in this, what the foreign press has called the Second American Revolution, are we going to react when Joe Biden calls us terrorists? Are we going to become angry extremists, take their bait, and get off message? Or are we going to rise above it and forge ahead and continue to organize and articulate what's wrong in America the way we did in 2010? And I'm hoping that this book, people can resonate with, you know, the real problems we've all faced, but decide to continue to go forward and not let their punches get us down.
Well, you know, one of the things that I thought initially is that the Republican Party was thrilled with the Tea Party movement. I mean, it certainly brought the Republican Party back to life after the Obama defeat. But then when Karl Rove came out and specifically went after you, it was obvious to me that they wanted our votes, but not necessarily our policy beliefs or our candidates.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the book, I define the establishment as not a party or not an ideology, but rather a mindset, a willingness, almost an eagerness, to compromise your principles in order to get ahead. And I think what happened was the Tea Party movement also is not just Republicans. It's not just conservatives. You have the CEO of Starbucks saying that much of this economic crisis is because of the failed leadership coming from the Obama administration, coming from all of Washington. And then he also said that he is a registered Democrat. So while he might not be, he might not consider himself part of the Tea Party, what he's done is definitely in the spirit of the Tea Party movement. So I think, Mark, what has happened is that the Republican Party embraced us, but then when we started speaking out and not just being partisan, started pointing out and holding all leaders accountable, they thought, uh-oh, you know, they're coming after us too, because what we are reminding people is that Republicans under Karl Rove held the White House, held Congress, and didn't take care of this problem. And while we embrace the, I do personally, I'm Republican, and I hope the Republican Party gets back to the principles on which it was founded and the principles on which our country was founded, they don't want us to hold their own accountable. And it's just the establishment trying to crush this movement. But, you know, it's just like the emperor has no clothes. All the emperor's courts are trying to discredit the little boy who's pointing to the naked emperor parading down the streets.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that emperor analogy works well for a lot of things, including Barack Obama's intellect, including Barack Obama's political experience. We were led to believe that this emperor was the smartest potential president that America had ever seen, and that he had the experience that it took to be president, and we're finding out right now that he's in way over his head, don't you think?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I have a chapter in my book that I call our follower in chief, because that's exactly what he is, unfortunately. And instead of, you know, I do talk about some specific policy failures, but the theme of that chapter is about how while the election may have made him president, it did not make him presidential. And I point to how in many situations, whether it was the Gulf oil spill, or the Egyptian uprise, how he waited for the media, he waited for public outcry to determine what he was supposed to do. And unfortunately for him, inaction is indeed itself an action. So we can't have, especially when so much of our foreign policy is at a peak crisis, when our economic matters are at a peak crisis, we cannot have a man who's waiting to be told what to do, who follows what's popular rather than following what's right and committed to what's right. And I try to lay out what I think is a clear argument for his character. While he may be a good person, may be sincere, it's not up to me to judge, his character certainly isn't strong enough for another 4 years in the midst of this turmoil.
You may be the one person on the planet who can relate to what Sarah Palin went through in 2008. Now, I don't want to sound sexist, and I don't want to sound like I'm flirting on the air, but you are a very attractive young lady. So is Sarah Palin. So is Michelle Bachmann. And I've come to the conclusion, and I'd like your opinion on this, that there is nothing that scares the hell out of the left more than an attractive, conservative, pro-life, fiscally responsible female running on the Republican ticket.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I'll take it a step further and say there's nothing that scares the establishment, you know, not just the left, but the establishment. And I think that's part of what's going on with Karl Rove. And first of all, female candidates in general have a tough time. But then if you are a conservative female, it's even worse. And there is such a double standard. But I think what's exciting is that both sides of the aisle are beginning to recognize this. I'll share one story from the campaign trail. Even before it escalated, the sexism in my race escalated to the level in which it did, there was a lot of things that, you know, you would never dig up something that a male candidate, you know, did 20 years ago, or if you did, it wouldn't get the attention that it did. And, you know, I made a bad choice about a date when I was 16 years old. I talk about it in the book. If it were a male, they'd be like, ah, you know, he was a rascal, you know, when in his teen years, but look at where he is now. No, you know, they resorted to the politics of personal destruction in my case. And but I was watching Fox News one time, and I saw this one woman who just, you know, was really insistent that, you know, she's, you know, what's happening with Christine O'Donnell, it's the politics of personal destruction. Her opponent doesn't have a platform to stand on. These are the dirty tricks. And I was so happy that somebody was was speaking that, speaking what, you know, I was feeling, but you don't want to sound like a whiner or a victim. So I looked her up to call her, and here she runs this organization to elect Democrat pro-abortion female candidates to Congress. And to me, that was a lesson that we can learn, because although I would want to run a candidate against every single one of her candidates,
yes.
And in terms of the mission of her organization, I hope that it does not succeed. But for that moment on television, she was speaking out for truth. And I thought, you know, and I thanked her, because that, too, is a Tea Party mentality, in that you're going to speak out for against an injustice regardless of who is doing it. And we, as the Tea Party movement, we have the winning principles on our side. And again, I close the book with a chapter about defeating the power of the soundbite, how the left, the socialists, need to resort to deception. But if we can almost, I want to say, learn from their tricks, and that rise above it, be of one sound, you know, one accord, one message, and not resort to mudslinging or name-calling, and be classy about it. You know, my dad said, you know, think of, as you're talking, think, would Jackie O be saying this? You know, because she was a woman of class. And if we can do that, we can become the powerhouse that can make sure that Barack Obama is a one-term president.
One of the things you mentioned was the double standard, and I was surprised by the fact that you were taken to task over something that happened when you were 16 years old. You went on a blind date with a guy who happened to be involved in the whole witchcraft thing, but nobody in the media seemed to care that Hillary Clinton, while the First Lady, claimed that she was channeling Eleanor Roosevelt. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, why is it that a 50-something-year-old Hillary Clinton can say something like that and get away with it, but something that happened when you were 16 is such a big deal?
Right, because, again, it's the politics of personal destruction. And when they don't have a platform, when they're threatened, they attack. And you know what's frustrating? A lot of people have said, you know, what do you think is, you know, contributed to your loss? And again, I articulate this in the book. I don't think it was any one thing. I think if we had had more time, you know, we needed either the strength of a united party. We needed to duplicate what they did in Kentucky, where Senator Mitch McConnell was railing on Rand Paul, but then as soon as he got the nomination, all that was behind them, and they ran forward to Election Day. Well, my party didn't do that. You had Karl Rove continuing the lies about me that my own party had put out, even up until after Election Day in November. And then, of course, we had the heavy lift of Barack Obama personally coming to Delaware to campaign against me. We either needed the strength and organization of a united party or more time to organize within. But we only had about 5.5 weeks. And I used to joke that, you know, by December, we're going to have a well-oiled machine. Unfortunately, Election Day is in November.
At this point, we lost contact with Christine O'Donnell due to a technical error, but we will have Christine back at about the 54-minute mark to complete this interview. Now we move on to my second guest, Ann Bernhardt, who certainly is no stranger to troublemaking herself. Her YouTube video has received over 250,000 hits. Now, in this video, she attacks Lindsey Graham, and deservingly so, I might add, for suggesting that whenever Muslim extremists commit violence, it's the fault of the American citizen who somehow incited that violence. Anne, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anne, as I watched your YouTube video, I have to admit it's probably the first time I've ever cheered a YouTube video. Absolutely fantastic, saying the things that other people don't dare to say, saying what needs to be said by someone. What was it that motivated you to record the video and then release it on YouTube?
Common sense and extreme righteous anger. How could you not be enraged to hear a politician go on television and declare that he wants to submit Americans to Sharia law, shred the Constitution of the United States, shred the First Amendment, shred equal protection, shred due process, and have the government outside of the law coming after American citizens who are exercising their First Amendment rights to criticize a totalitarian, seditious political system that is murdering not only Americans but murdering people all over the world. And he says that we need to be people like me need to be punished. That's the line in the sand. Enough is enough. Apparently nobody else in this country was going to say or do anything. I've been sitting and watching this for my entire adult life, and nobody will stand up and say anything. Everybody is cowering in fear. Everybody is terrified of the IRS. Everybody is terrified of the government. Everybody is terrified of being defriended on Facebook. Well, enough's enough. Somebody has to step up and lead from the front on this deal, and it became very, very clear to me that if I didn't do it, there was a good sporting chance that nobody else in a nation of 310 million people would, and that's disgusting.
I don't understand why Lindsey Graham would like to place the blame on the American who burned the Koran or did something to incite violence instead of the Muslims who actually commit the violence, in response to it. I mean, they're the ones breaking the law. The Americans just exercising free speech.
Well, Lindsey Graham is a moral and intellectual degenerate. He will say anything and he will do anything in order to maintain and advance his own power. That's all these people are about. They don't care about what's right. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about the Constitution. All they care about is themselves. What must Lindsey Graham say in order to ingratiate himself to the seats of power? And even if the seats of power, even if the seat of power in the United States would be the devil himself, these politicians are so morally far gone that they would ingratiate themselves to the devil if they thought that it would advance their power and advance their wealth and be in their best interest. These people are the scum of the universe, and that's why this country is in such dire straits and is probably teetering on the verge of collapse.
I couldn't agree with you more. Now, tell us what made you decide to use bacon as a bookmark in the Koran.
Oh, I'm just a smart aleck, and I also the whole notion that we're falling for Stone Age pagan superstitions here. People touching a piece of bacon to a book, a piece of paper which is tree pulp that has ink printed on it. That's not going to cause some pagan moon deity to swing out of the sky and cut your head off. We need to stop stooping to these people's intellectual level because they're literally developmentally disabled, stone-aged pagan superstitions. And we're being beaten by this. And I also thought it was kind of witty, too.
Well, I got to tell you, everyone that I've shared the story with or sent the video to has really, really laughed. Now, I am going to guess that you're a hardcore conservative and that you probably have a strong belief in the right of an American to own and carry a gun. Are you in some way protected? Because I'm serious. I'm really worried about your safety having pulled a stunt like that.
I am more heavily armed than the French army.
That's good to hear because, we live in a society where people are always worried about something Americans are saying offending someone else. No one seems to ever worry about whether or not something another country says would offend us. Why are we the ones who have to walk on eggshells all the time and keep our free speech in check?
Because in this country, for the last 50 years, Marxists have taken over both the education system and the media. And what they have done is they have inculcated a culture of self-loathing. We have been taught that good people hate themselves, that even to the point of being culturally suicidal. Good people hate themselves. Good people reject their own culture. We've also been taught that the highest virtue in human existence is to be nice. The measure of a man is whether or not he is universally liked and loved. And reference in your own lives this Facebook culture. And I think Facebook is just evil. I won't have anything to do with it, but I know what it is. I hear from people all the time who are talking about, well, I posted something on my wall on Facebook and somebody defriended me and this is just awful. And, oh, if I say anything, the people at work around the water cooler, they just give me the cold shoulder. You people need to man up. Who the hell cares whether or not you're universally loved? You're never going to be universally loved. You need to be worried about whether or not you are witnessing to the truth. You need the only person's opinion at the end of the day that truly, truly matters in your life is the opinion of your Savior, Jesus Christ. You need to stop worrying about what some dork on Facebook or some fool at your office thinks, and you need to start worrying about whether or not Jesus Christ is going to look at you at the moment of your particular judgment and say, why did you let me down? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you stand up for me? That needs to be the priority.
It's interesting you make that point, because I remember one time I was sitting around a table with a bunch of conservatives, and we were discussing some comments that Ashley Judd had made regarding the fact that she was in agreement with partial birth abortions. And I remember one woman just going off about how horrible that was, and you know, how in the world could Ashley Judd be for this? And I said, okay, so the next time an Ashley Judd movie comes to town, why don't we get together a bunch of conservatives and make some signs and protest outside of the theater? And her response was, oh my gosh, Mark, that's not dignified. That's what liberals do. So, I mean, are we ever going to get anywhere as long as we are afraid to stand up for our beliefs and be counted?
No, we're not going to get anywhere. Not only are we not going to get anywhere, but Western civilization and our country is going to collapse. What is the central message of Christ in the Gospels in regards to how we live our lives on earth? It isn't be nice. What he says over and over and over again is be not afraid. Be not afraid. Fear not. We, all of the people on the right in this nation, are cowering in fear perpetually. If you're doing that, you are not living the gospel. You have no actual genuine engagement with Christianity. You either man up and suck it up and stop being afraid, or you're going to lose your country and you're going to lose your civilization.
Listening to you, you're very, very articulate. You've got a lot of great ideas. I think the number of people that have seen your YouTube videos and approved of it is proof of just how popular you are. Is there a possible political run in your future?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Never, ever, 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 ever. I don't have the personality for it. I'm more Napoleon than I am Reagan. I have a dictatorial personality. I like to think that I'm a benevolent dictator. And as a small business owner, that works because things get done. But the thought of going to Washington, D.C., or even just into a state capital and having to deal with these people who I already hold in such utter and complete contempt, who have proved themselves to be moral degenerates, and beyond that, have proved themselves to be slack-jawed, mouth-breathing imbeciles almost across the board, I'd last about 5 minutes, and then I'd be pulling my hair out. Sorry, guys, but it literally is not going to happen. I couldn't do it. I don't do well working in groups. I don't do well sitting in meetings. So this notion of the slow gears of government and having to deal with horrific, immoral, stupid people, it ain't never going to happen. I'll stay over here, and I'll say the things that everybody needs to hear and the things that are obvious truth, and then you need to find some other people who can work in groups and do have the temperament for such a thing. And, you know, if you like what they say and they kind of mirror the things that I talk about, that's great. But, no, I will never be in government.
So I guess that's why you own your own business. You prefer making you are a dictator.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I was 28 or 29 when I opened my businesses, and now I have three, and yeah, that's the only way to fly for me. I can't imagine ever going back to not being the man in charge. It probably wouldn't be very smooth.
give me your appraisal of Barack Obama's performance thus far.
Barack Obama's performance. He's an enemy usurper. He is the enemy of this nation. He is a traitor. He is a seditionist. And the only satisfactory end to any of this is Barack Obama being frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs to be imprisoned and to stand trial for treason and sedition against the United States of America. Anything less than that, and justice will not have been done.
Let me ask your opinion on the birth certificate issue. I know you've made reference to that in the past. Why do you think, with numerous unimpeachable experts in the computer world coming forward, including one guy who was one of the first employees at Adobe, another guy named Joseph Newcomer, who was the one who basically sent Dan Rather to an early retirement when Dan Rather tried to use forged documents against former President George W. Bush regarding the whole National Guard issue. With people like that, credible people with decades of computer experience coming forward and saying that the birth certificate released by Barack Obama is not real, was constructed on a computer, and we not only can we not get the mainstream media to pay attention to it, even the conservative media won't pay attention to it.
Well, it's all the same. The whole business of, you know, people like Beck and Ann Coulter and Michelle Malkin just scoffing and wagging their finger at people who, like you said, are simply referencing a massive pile of objective, mathematical, unimpeachable evidence. It just shows that they're all on the same team. We have to understand that we are already, our nation's been overthrown. We are living in a Marxist oligarchy, and the Marxist oligarchs completely control and own the media. The media is 100% in the tank for the Marxist Obama regime. They will not say or do anything that doesn't come directly from this cabal. So the notion that you're going to have any sort of honest reportage coming out of the media in this country is like expecting Pravda in the Soviet Union to print anything honest. It's not their function any longer to be honest. It's their function to lie. That is their vocation. That is their charge, to put out lies. Now, I think there's another group of people who are more on the right and who I suspect have been told that if Obama is in any way challenged or removed, that it will incite a race war in this country. And they are terrified of that. They're terrified that if they touch him, that it will cause riots in the cities and it may cause a full-blown civil war. I'm of the opinion that if you have a non-trivial percentage of your country who absolutely cannot live under the Constitution of the United States and who cannot live under the rule of law, war is inevitable. Let's get it on. The earlier we do it, the better it will be. The better it will be for all of us.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the racial backlash, because I had retired Major General Paul Vallely, who was the first terrorism expert hired by Fox News after 9/11 on my show. And one, he believes the birth certificate to be not genuine. And secondly, he has actually talked to people on the Hill, and he knows for a fact that numerous people within Congress believe the birth certificate to be a forgery, but are not moving forward for exactly the reason you just stated. Now, some people are also making the argument that Obama is definitely on his way to being a one-termer, so why rock the boat now? Let's just take care of the guy at the ballot box and not go through what could be something very dangerous for the country by trying to go after him with criminal charges for falsifying a birth certificate.
No. Once you establish the precedent of disregarding the Constitution and disregarding the rule of law, all bets are off, okay? You cannot, on a scale this large, you cannot simply overlook the fact that the executive branch of our government has been usurped. It's been overthrown by a man who may not even be a citizen of this country and who is definitely a Marxist interloper, without any question. This is a treasonous, seditionist man. This is an instance of treason. If you can't even defend your Constitution against that, against having your executive branch overthrown, what can you defend it against? If we can't, what is it, Article 2, Section 1? If we can't even defend and enforce Article 2, Section 1, then all bets are off. The First Amendment's going to go. The Second Amendment is going to go. These people in Congress, if what General Vallely says is true, and there are people in Congress who know for a fact that he is illegitimate, which anybody with a brain does now, especially since he released that forged birth certificate, if they sit by and watch and do nothing, they are in direct violation of their oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. These people are oath breakers. They are criminals. They have no personal integrity, and they are massive, massive cowards. They are not fit to walk the halls of our Capitol. They are not fit to hold their office. And if we just roll our eyes and say, well, let's all go along to get along and let's just wait until the elections, guys, look at what these people are doing. This country isn't going to make it to January of 2013. It's not going to make it. They're going to implode and collapse this thing, according to the Cloward-Piven strategy, long, long before that. Obama is going to incite nuclear World War III centered on Israel long before January of 2013. You don't just sit and wait for this to work itself out. This could be the end of our nation and our civilization, and millions, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people could die as a result of this usurpation of the executive branch. If this isn't worth fighting for, what the hell is?
Excellent question. I'd like to see that posed to members of Congress when they're in a situation that they can't back away from answering the question. I don't know about you, but personally, I feel that Boehner and Issa are two of the most spineless people in Washington for not taking up this issue. My understanding is that the head of the SEIU declared ISIS position vulnerable in 2012, and then suddenly all that talk we heard about from ISIS about launching an investigation every 2 to 3 weeks, and that he was going to be this super aggressive guy holding the Obama administration accountable, just went out of the window, and now he's focused on government regulation. What are your thoughts specifically about people like John Boehner and Daryl ISIS?
Well, I've said it before. They're all moral degenerates, all of them, on both sides of the aisle. I'm to the point where I think you'd almost have to be some sort of a psychopath to want to go to Washington. They're all worried about their own personal power and enrichment. They do not care. They don't care about the rule of law or the Constitution. And this is why we have to have term limits. If you want to maintain this country, you have got to eliminate this dynastic, careerist dynamic that is going on. You go to Washington as a citizen servant, and you serve one term, and then you're done. And if you want to run for a higher office, for example, if you serve a term in the House and you want to run for a term in the Senate, that's fine. And then if a senator wants to run for president, that's fine. But this deal of these god-awful moral degenerates and imbeciles like Sheila Jackson Lee and Hank Johnson, these are people who aren't even intelligent enough to get a menial job out here in the real world. And these people are walking the halls of the United States Capitol and voting on things that affect, by proxy, almost everybody on the face of the earth. No, 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 no. We have to get rid of these people. We need to have term limits so that there is absolutely no financial incentive whatsoever to go to Washington. In fact, going to Washington should probably be a financial burden. It should be a volunteerism and a sacrifice that citizens make in the spirit of serving their country. People should not be more wealthy after returning from Washington than they were before. In fact, most people should have to, you know, they'd be walking away from their businesses, presumably, putting all that on hold, serving 2 years in Congress, for example, and then coming home. Guys, that's the way it used to be in this country. That's the way it used to be. I had a great-great-grandfather in the late 1800s who was a concurrently practicing physician, attorney, and state senator. Why did he serve as a state senator? Not because he was power hungry, because back in those days, people actually had a spirit of service, and he knew that he was a successful professional and that it was somewhat incumbent upon him as a citizen, as a successful citizen, to go and serve the government in the state legislature, and he did that. That's what that was about. This whole deal of politics being a profession, this country will never right itself, ever, as long as that dynamic exists. There have to be term limits.
You mentioned that you're a big believer in the Second Amendment. Now, I don't know if you've seen this, but right now the Obama administration is having the FBI pass these flyers out to gun stores and to Army surplus stores. And one of the things they're saying is if someone comes in and buys waterproof matches or a high-capacity magazine or large amounts of ammo in a waterproof container, they want to know about it. It's so ridiculous. They've told military surplus stores in this memo, in this flyer that they're handing out, if somebody comes in your store and buys a whole bunch of MREs, meals ready to eat, that's suspicious activity. You should turn that in. But then at the very bottom of the brochure, and I think this is the thing that you're really going to like, they point out that when we say suspicious activity, please understand that just because someone sounds different than you or dresses differently than you or has different beliefs than you does not mean that they are suspicious. My way of reading that, my way of translating that was, we're not interested in Muslim extremists. We're talking about the Tea Party here.
Well, this is obvious what's going on. I mean, this is Germany, and it's about 1937 or 38. It's obvious what they're doing. They are going to attempt, I believe, Obama is going to attempt to incite some sort of a civil war. I believe firmly that he's going to try to do that. The other thing that's so laughable is that guys who own Army surplus stores and other such businesses, these are the good guys in society. These are guys who are patriotic Americans, who have a high degree of common sense. Obviously, they're small business owners, so they know how to function in a capitalistic society, and they've got brains in their head. They're not going to turn. If I walk into an Army surplus store and I buy some waterproof matches and some ammo cans, they're not going to turn me in. They know that I'm the good guy. What does the FBI think? That these store owners are actually going to comply with this? On the other hand, If a Army surplus store owner sees two Muslim men walk in their 20s and start buying all kinds of supplies, okay, there's your red flag. The Army surplus store guy is going to try to notify the FBI of that. And you know what the reality is? The FBI has been so completely infiltrated that even if the Army surplus store guy did report suspicious Muslim activity, the FBI is so far gone and is so infiltrated that they would ignore it. So we're on our own, people, either way you look at it. There is no help for us from above. This is on us. Don't be afraid. I've been saying this for years. You need to be buying long guns. You need to be buying ammunition. You need to be buying MREs and dehydrated food. You need to be buying water. You need to be buying fuel, necessary medications, backup eyeglasses if you need them. You need to stock up on these survival-type things. Because if the poop hits the proverbial fan, if you don't already have those things, it's going to be far too late. You have to have them now. So don't be afraid. Get what you need to get and be aggressive about it. Stop cowering in fear of the government, for the love of God.
Now, one criticism that I've seen thrown at one of your YouTube videos is that these acts of terrorism are being carried out by Muslim extremists, but by putting bacon in the Quran, you offended all Muslims. What's your reaction to that?
Oh, I don't give a crap who I offend. Islam is a militaristic, expansionist, totalitarian, seditious political system that is evil to the core. There is no such thing as a moderate Muslim. There's no such thing as a moderate Nazi. There's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. It's exactly the same idea. You can't meet a German person who says, well, you know, I just worked in an office for the Third Reich during World War II. I was just a moderate Nazi. No, the platform of the political system itself is evil. If you willingly subscribe to a platform that is intrinsically evil, that is intrinsically seditious, you are guilty. I don't give a crap what you think. Okay? I don't care if I offend anyone. If you are so mentally far gone that you can't stand having your sensibilities offended without going out and cutting another person's head off, you're disqualified from humanity on that count right there. I don't care what you think. It doesn't matter. These people, whether or not I burn a Koran with strips of bacon in it, that makes absolutely no difference. Those people hated me and wanted to kill me and wanted to kill all of us the morning that I woke up before I had done that. Why? Because we are not Muslims, and that is what they are told they must do. Understand, Islam does not tolerate anyone or anything else. If you are not Muslim, if you do not submit to Islam, you must either be converted by force or you must be killed. They already hated me when I woke up that Sunday morning because I'm a Roman Catholic. And because when I walked out my front door, I wasn't wearing a potato sack over my head. That in and of itself is enough reason for them to kill me. Therefore, if that Sunday morning when I woke up, they wanted to kill me, and then that night after I made the video, they wanted to kill me and all of the rest of us, aren't those two quantities equivalent? Aren't those the same thing? It was X in the morning and it was X in the evening. What does it matter whether or not I burn a Koran with bacon in it? They still want to kill me. We have to think this through. We have to think logically. There is no appeasement of these people. And why in the world would you ever want to appease evil? Why would you want to compromise with Satan? That's insanity. You will never, ever win. All that will happen is that evil will keep taking bigger and bigger and bigger chunks out of you, slowly but surely, until he wins completely. Satan isn't about compromise. He's not about splitting the difference. And Islam is satanic, therefore, there is no compromise.
I think that that is a very interesting way of putting it. And part of what you're saying is that there is no small C communist, there is no small in Nazi, and you're also saying there is no small M Muslim extremist.
Well, drop the word extremist. A Muslim is perpetually engaged in jihad. The only question is it overt or is it covert through things like financial support or cultural infiltration? But if you are a Muslim, and if you read the Koran, my God, read the Koran, people. The Koran is the constitution of this political system. And what it says over and over and over again is that you must conquer the entire world. You must submit every person on the face of the earth to Islam. The only acceptable legal system is Sharia. Every government must be overthrown. Sedition is the core platform of the Koran. This is not a religion. You've got to stop talking about it like it's a religion. It's a political system, and it is one that does not compromise. And if we're compromising with it, we will lose. Look at France. The news was out yesterday. Do you realize that there are more practicing Muslims in France than there are Roman Catholics today? My God, they're already taking over entire countries in Europe. This has to stop. We've got to wake up.
Well, Muammar Gaddafi is famous for saying that we'll be able to take over America without firing a shot. And you talked about the fact that some of their tactics are overt and some of them are covert. One of them that is very covert but seems to be working for them is a very high reproduction rate. I read an article that said that Muslim families in America are having, on average, 8 children per family. Now, compare that to the 1.5 that we're having right now. And it seems to me like eventually, if they just keep reproducing, we're going to see a case where there are going to be enough Muslims in this country to demand Sharia law because they're going to have the votes to do it. What are your thoughts on the fact that the overthrow of America may not be violent, may not involve guns, but could simply be a factor of reproduction rates?
Absolutely, but you're framing it backwards.
Okay.
The problem isn't that Muslims are having, quote, too many children. The problem is that we, Judeo-Christian society, have turned our back on God and have turned our back on the truth and are willingly contracepting ourselves. The problem there is with us. We're the ones who are committing the evil of contracepting and sterilizing ourselves. Contraception is a grave mortal sin. Everybody agreed on that. Every Christian denomination on the surface of the earth was in complete agreement on the intrinsic grave sinfulness of contraception up until 1930, ladies and gentlemen, 1930. And it was the Anglicans, it was the Church of England, who were the very, very first ones to come out and say, well, in certain circumstances, contraception is appropriate. And then from there, the whole thing just collapsed. Most of your listeners listening right now, many of you are probably not Catholic. You are probably squirming in your chairs right now as I say this. But you have got to hear this. You have been told a lie. Contraception is killing us. It has led to no-fault divorce. Contraception led directly to the legalization of abortion. Contraception is the root cause of all of these issues of sexuality and family issues that we have in this country. It all goes back to the sin of contraception. The problem isn't that the Muslims are having 8 children. The problem is that we aren't having 8 children. We should be having 8 children. People should accept children as a gift from God and a blessing. They shouldn't be sterilizing themselves. Men should not be sterilizing their wives by forcing them to take a pill every day. If you love your wife, you love her fertility. You love all of her. You don't hate her fertility and make her take pills to make her infertile. Because we become so materialistic and we have fallen for the Marxist propaganda that having children is financially irresponsible and financially burdensome. Why do you think we have to have programs like Social Security and Medicare? How did people get along in civilization before there were these government insurance and retirement plans? The way people got along in their old age and in their retirement is because they had children, and their children were able to take care of them. And not one or two children, but 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 children. If you have multiple children, if you have a nice large family, it's no problem for each one of your children to pitch in a little bit every month if you need some money in your retirement. The burden is spread. If I can even use the word burden, that's a bit inappropriate, but you understand what I'm saying. The financial burden is spread over a large number of children. You don't need to be dependent on the government for a Social Security check. You don't need to be dependent on the government for a Medicare benefit. Okay? This is all part of the Marxist satanic plan. Get people to stop reproducing. If they don't have any children, then when they enter their elder years, who can they rely on? Well, here's the government to take care of you. People, this is all connected. I know a lot of your listeners probably don't want to hear this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are probably contracepting right now. But people, you have got to face up to the truth. We're doing this to ourselves, and yes, if we don't start reproducing, we are going to be absolutely overrun by people who are reproducing naturally. And we are the ones who are engaging in the evil by contracepting ourselves.
There's an old saying, if you point out a problem and you don't have a solution, you're just griping. And I know you just pointed out a solution to that. But let's draw back and look at the bigger picture. And that is the fact that you believe that our government has been overthrown by the usurper, Barack Obama. Where do you see this going? Are Cloward and Pivens going to win? Will American society be brought down? Are we inevitably being drawn toward a civil war? Or is there still a way to avoid it?
Well, it's hope for the best, prepare for the worst, but yeah, I am of the very, very strong opinion that at this point, yes, this is probably not going to end well at all, and that we do need to be prepared in our homes for hot civil war. If it never happens, praise God. Praise God if it doesn't happen. But if it does, I'm going to be ready, and I'm at this point pretty much banking on the fact that it is going to happen. I see no leadership whatsoever. I mean, even if you look at this debt ceiling deal and these budget proposals that people are putting forth, even the Ryan plan, guys, these aren't serious. These aren't for real. all these people are talking about, even the most conservative, quote-unquote, in Washington, all they're talking about now is reducing the rate of increase in spending. They're not talking about any real spending cuts. All they're doing is talking about flattening out the line that is the upward-sloping rate of increase in spending. None of this is serious. This, unless you get serious and you start talking about sunsetting Social Security and Medicare, for example, for people born on or after January 1, 1960. Okay, now we're talking. If you every time you hear a politician say something like, we have to save Social Security and Medicare, okay, that person is completely unserious and is either nefarious or stupid. These are Ponzi schemes. Social Security and Medicare are Ponzi schemes. They are criminal, and they are mathematically impossible. You do not save a criminal enterprise that is mathematically impossible. The only logical, rational, moral approach to an existing Ponzi scheme is to unwind it and shut it down as quickly as possible. If you have people who are talking about anything less than that, if you have people who are talking about saving it, guys, it's not going to work. Our economy is going to collapse. It's going to collapse under these programs. Why hasn't Obamacare been repealed? Why? What is going on there? Obamacare by itself is sufficient to collapse our economy. It will do it. Just by itself. Understand, Obamacare is probably going to cost 20 times more than what they said it's going to cost if it's not repealed. 20 times. 20 times. That is going to collapse our economy. No question. It's mathematical certitude as much as 1 plus 1 equals 2 is mathematical certitude. If we don't have people that are even willing to talk about things in terms of a realistic matrix, it's hopeless. It's just hopeless. So, yeah, you've got to be prepared for this thing to collapse.
I have to ask, what is next for Anne Barnhart? Do we see more videos coming out in the future? What's next from you?
Oh, I'm here running my businesses. I'm a commodity broker, so as long as the markets are here and trading and I feel like it's safe for my clients to be engaging the markets, I'll be here doing my job. I have a consulting firm. I'll continue to do that for as long as I possibly can. I have no plans at all. In terms of more YouTube videos, I'm not on a schedule. If the spirit moves me and I have something to say and I think it is better said on a video presentation, I'll go ahead and do that. But I have no agenda. I have no plan. I have no objective other than witnessing to the truth. That's it. That's all I'm doing. And I think that's one of the reasons why the mainstream media just will not touch me, because they can't figure me out. They're trying to figure out what it is that I'm playing at, and they don't understand. I'm not playing at anything. I'm not looking for anyone's vote. I'm not looking for money. I don't want anything from anybody. I am just trying to bear witness that when history looks back at this phase, no matter how it turns out, My touchstone is, again, Nazi Germany in the 1930s. You look back at that period of history and you say, why wasn't anybody speaking up? Why wasn't anybody saying anything? Now, you've got a few. There was Dietrich Bonhoeffer and people like that. But in general, the populace of Germany in the 1930s was silent. They didn't say a word. They just sat and watched while Hitler and the Third Reich happened. No matter how this turns out, history will not be able to look back at the United States of America in this phase and say nobody said anything. They're going to be able to look back and say there was at least one person, there was at least one crazy woman out in Denver who was shouting at the top of her lungs, and at least there was one person who was willing to speak the truth. At this point, that's really what my objective is. And like I said, political office, dear God, no. Absolutely not, never, ever, ever.
Well, I want to thank you for the contributions that you have made. You've certainly awakened a large number of people, and I know you've got a large fan base out there. And I know you said you won't be putting anything else out until the Spirit moves you. I hope the Spirit moves you soon, and I hope the Spirit continues to move you for a long time, because we need to hear people speaking the truth at the top of their lungs the way you have. Anne, I want to thank you for being on the show today. It's been an absolute delight having you here, and we hope to have you back sometime again soon.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. God bless you.
God bless you. And we are now going to rejoin Christine O'Donnell. Christine, thank you for calling back in. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Sorry about whatever technical difficulty we had, but I'm glad I can join you at least at the top of the hour.
Absolutely. You know, you pointed out in your book that you admitted to some mistakes in your past. I'm going to admit to a mistake. I have a brand new board, as it's called, in terms of the software that I'm using. And I made a mistake. My assistant was calling the next guest and getting the next guest ready and had not muted the line so that we would not hear that. And so in an attempt to mute the line, I disconnected you. So that was 100% my fault. It wasn't so much a technical difficulty as technical ineptness.
Yeah. Well, you know what's great about that, Mark, is that that's happened a lot this week, and people are trying to say like I don't, you know, whatever. But so I'm glad that it happened. I'm glad we could talk again. And if I could just say, I'm not sure how much time we have, but you know, while I was on hold, I was able to listen to your conversation with you and
Ann Bernhard. Yes.
Yeah, and she's a great woman, and it struck me as very telling. And the whole purpose that I wrote this book, as I was saying before when I was on, is that, you know, to inspire people to stay involved and stay active. And I heard her say, you know, never ever would she actually, run for elected office. And I have to say, some of us belong on behind the scenes and belong as the foot soldiers, but some of us are called to put our name on the line, but we're having that reaction. Heck no, you know, they watch what happened to me, they watch what happened to Sarah Palin, they watch what is happening to Michelle Bachmann. If we let their politics of personal destruction and their bullying us and their just nastiness beat us back to the sidelines, we've let them win. So I'm really hoping that when people read the book, they read about the mistakes that I've made and that you can get up again. It's not about whether or not you've fallen. It's about whether or not you're going to have the character and strength to continue. I'm hoping that they can say, if she can do it, so can I. So I hope that more people who have the political bug but might be thinking, you know, oh, that's not for me. You know, I don't know how to get involved politically. This might help them get the confidence that that they can move forward. They can put their name on the line.
One of the things I loved about this book is that you state at the very beginning that you know that this book is going to be gone over with a magnifying glass and a fine-tooth comb. They're going to check every single fact. So you decided to put those people to work on your own behalf. You said that there is a possibility that you are related to Charles Carroll, who was the last living signer of the Declaration of Independence. So you decided to throw that in hopes that all the people that are spending time and effort going over your book will find that out for you. I thought that was pretty clever. Have you heard anything yet from anybody about that?
No, we haven't, but they're trying to take everything else out of context and misrepresent what I do say in the book. And it's funny because the people who are saying that the book isn't factual are the same people who knowingly filed a false claim against me, knowingly abused government resources and falsified government documents. So, you know, they can't be taken at their word. Honesty and integrity is not something that's a standard of theirs. But, you know, if I had not said, you know, please verify this for me, I'm sure we would know by now whether or not it's true. You know, but my grandmother's name is Kathleen Carroll, and I go into a little bit about the story from her, that she came from a very prominent family but was disinherited. And I talk about that in the beginning of the book, not to shame my grandmother, but to say that, you know, it's in my blood to stand for conviction. It's in my blood to sacrifice your fortune to do what is right. So, you know, we're told that she was disinherited from the Carroll fortune, from the Charles Carroll family again, but we have not been able to do the research. And, you know, darn it, because I said we haven't been able to do the research to verify it, my skeptics are verifying everything else. But on troublemakerbook.com, we have all of the chapter notes. Every single allegation that I make, every single thing that I say, we have verified, we have footnoted, hundreds of footnotes, very well researched and documented. We didn't include it in the book because it would have been another, you know, 100 pages or so. So if anyone, you know, I know that I have been so honored the way the Tea Party activists have come to my defense and, you know, defending me online and silencing the critics. Those resources you need to continue to do that, and thank you for that, are on troublemakerbook.com /chapter notes.
Chapter notes, okay. We're going to put that up on our website. If people who are used to coming to teapartypowerhour.com will just give us about an hour after the broadcast, we'll have that up on our website ready to go so you can get to Christine's site and take a look at all the proof you need to help back Christine as she is attacked, and I think we all knew it was an inevitable attack. You could have said anything. I mean, you could have said, you know, the sun comes up in the morning, and they would have pulled a global warming scientist to tell you that you're wrong.
Exactly. But,
now, this is kind of a personal wish. I am hoping that in addition to finding out whether you're related to Charles Carroll, that some botanist will come forward and tell you what the heck sticky gooks are.
Well, that has happened, and apparently it's the Kentucky coffee tree or something like that. But
the Kentucky coffee tree.
Yeah, and speaking of, they try to discredit everything. Okay, apparently this is a little controversy, non-controversy behind that. They're no longer allowed to grow in Florida. So, of course, I didn't make up that sticky gooks were in Florida. That environmental law came in place after the 70s. So, yeah, little ridiculous accusations, non-issues, but we've got the proof up on that website.
Are you kidding me? They've actually gone after the sticky gook issue?
Mm-hmm. Anything.
That is amazing. Now, my question is, if you're found with sticky gooks in your backyard in Florida because they occurred naturally, they were growing wild there, does the government arrest the owner of the house, or do they arrest the sticky gooks? Who's legally liable for the sticky gooks growing
in your yard? I don't know. That will be interesting. It sure will be interesting. But I have to tell you, this is all a lesson for us in the Tea Party movement in that, you know, we cannot let them distract us. And when they try to do this, instead of, you know, getting in an online battle about, you know, what the ousted Republican leadership is trying to do, say that it was Mike Castle who introduced Haley Barbour and not Tom Ross, you know, just give it right back to them and say it doesn't change the fact that you interfered with her campaign, or it doesn't change the fact that, you know, like, just get them right back on message and don't let them get us in a fight about sticky gooks or whatever. Just, we have got to, as the Tea Party movement is in this crossroads, we have got to rise above it and to continue to boldly and proudly stand on our principles, get behind the candidate that we like, and make sure that Barack Obama is a one-term presidency. Don't let Karl Rove or anyone else bully us back to the sidelines.
I have to tell you, I think Karl Rove's stock went down considerably whenever he attacked you. I mean, I was in total shock. I had gone to see Karl Rove speak on the Texas A&M campus along with Juan Williams one day. He impressed me. I liked the way he was going after Obamacare. And, you know, when I saw him go after you, though, I just felt like this guy is an imposter. He is about keeping the good old boys within the good old boy network. in the status quo, you know, keeping the establishment where it is. And the fact is, he sees the Republican Party as being something that is his exclusive domain, along with a number of other good old boy Republicans. And you were kind of playing in their sandbox without permission.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I recently said on a radio interview that the Republican Party has got to unite in order for us to move forward. And I extended the olive branch to Karl Rove, hoping that perhaps his ego was bruised because his expert opinion was that, you know, I could never beat this Republican in name only who voted with Mike Castle, who voted with the Democrats on major initiatives more than Republicans. But Karl Rove, you know, justified getting behind this liberal Republican, and then I bruised his ego by proving his expert opinion wrong. So I was hoping that it was an isolated case, but then he emerged and he's starting to beat up on Rick Perry. It's like, come on, you know, and I don't know what has gotten into his crawl. He and other people like Dana Perino, why they're willing to shoot within the tent the way they are. But I hope that we can emerge in strength and we can defend our good candidates, our good activists, keep our eye on the prize, and he will have to either start playing nicely with us or jump ship and get out of the sandbox. But we cannot let him bully us out of the political process.
I couldn't agree with you more. I don't think that Karl Rove understands that the Tea Party is not just there to provide votes for the Republican Party. We expect the people we elect to carry out policies that reflect our beliefs. And I have to tell you, Christine, I think the people that are there now, I am very upset with the Republican leadership. I think they're there to do one thing, and that's to continue to remain in office. They're more worried about being reelected than representing the people, as you pointed out in your book.
Exactly. And if you remember that, you know, during the whole debt to ceiling discussion, people were commentators and anchors as they're reporting from the Capitol building are saying, you know, and these Tea Party members of the caucus, they don't care if they're reelected. They just have one agenda. And it's like, oh, my gosh, imagine that. They want to go to Washington and do what's right. You know, so what so many leaders are hoping to turn a blind eye to is the fact that we are in a very serious situation. Our currency is being devalued at an alarming rate. Our economy is about to collapse. In my book, what I call for is a radical ideological reawakening and back to the principles that not only Republican Party was founded on, the principles our country was founded on. Because, Mark, you know, like so many of your listeners, imagine if your family found yourself in this extreme position where you were overextended, you would not just say, oh, well, let's get rid of one car payment. You know, you'd have to say, sorry, you know, we're not taking a faraway vacation. You know, maybe we're all going to go camping instead, or let's just take some time off and hang out together for vacation. We are making the radical cuts in our family budgets because we know the radical action is needed. And in the book, I share about having to do that very same thing personally. You know, when I found myself lived off my savings in order to run for office and then couldn't get a job afterwards. You know, I cut my cable, you know, moved into a smaller apartment, sold my house to use the equity to pay off my debt. Congress has to do the same thing now. And as your listeners know more than anyone, if we raise taxes to 100% on the wealthiest, it still wouldn't be enough to cover the deficit. So we need to do more. And those Tea Party folks who are speaking common sense solutions, the establishment's trying to put the blame on them, and we're just not buying it. We're just not buying it. Again, they're trying to say that the little boy pointing at the naked emperor marching down the street, they're trying to say that he's the one with the wrong message. But we're not going to let them win.
I fully expect that someone is going to evaluate this show today and say that that Christine O'Donnell kept using the word naked. you get attacked. Everything. I mean, it's just amazing to watch. Now, one of the things that frustrated the heck out of me was watching you debate Coons in the general election. In one of the debates, you were trying to explain to him that the words separation of church and state don't appear in the Constitution. Were you amazed at how many mainstream media outlets came out and said you didn't know what you were talking about?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I talk about that in what might be my favorite chapter, chapter 11, that I call Rise Above It, because, you know, I ask the question, where in the Constitution is the phrase separation of church and state? And he said the First Amendment. And I said, again, the phrase separation of church and state is in the First Amendment. And he said, yes. And then I said, oh, really? Can you name the five freedoms that are? And he couldn't, and he just, you know, diverted the attention. And here I was at a law school. So I thought, they got my sarcasm. They knew that I was saying the phrase. Had I clarified, you are wrong. Had I said that, perhaps it would have been different. But, you know, I share about how my staff and I were leaving. We're high-fiving each other, thinking that we just exposed my opponent, put him on the spot to the point where he had to ask for a lifeline. And by the time we got back to the office, the AP wire had a different story, that Christine O'Donnell kept asking her opponent, you know, can you tell me where, please? Like, oh, my goodness. And the telling thing was that the Associated Press isn't even familiar enough with our Constitution to know what is and isn't in it. And that, I think, ladies and gentlemen, is why our country's in the mess that it's in, because the Constitution is no longer the litmus test. It's no longer the document by which all legislation is viewed and evaluated. And the fact that we can have leaders, law students, law professors, major reporters not recognize who was in error. And the reason I call that chapter Rise Above It is because here I was, I talked about how months after the campaign, I'm enjoying a half-price burger with my friends, and I overhear this student. Yeah, I'm very Spencer. You know, I hear this conversation with a student just railing that I didn't know the First Amendment and continuing the lies. And what frustrated me was that the takeaway was still that I was wrong. And it wasn't an ego thing that I was wrong. It was more, was this all worth it? You know, that debate propelled the Constitution and the First Amendment to the forefront of public debate, and I think that that was a great thing, and I'd like to think that we educated a lot of people. But here we were months later, this young student, this future leader in my state didn't get the right message, had the wrong takeaway, and that can be disheartening, but we have to remember that our founders also had the same battle. You know, you didn't win the first time out. You know, I talk about General Nathaniel Greene, who lost just about every battle except the winning one. And that's what we have to remember, as war-weary as we are, as it might look like we're up against all hope. We can win if we do not give up.
Absolutely. Now, I'm looking through the book right now as we're speaking, and I'm on page 7. And I don't know if you saw this, but Ed Schultz at MSNBC doctored a piece of Rick Perry video and suggested that when Rick Perry used the term black cloud hanging over this country, that was a thinly veiled reference, a thinly veiled racist reference to Barack Obama. If you go back and look at the original video before Ed Schultz doctored it, he actually said this black cloud, that debt hanging over America, but of course Ed Schultz edited that out. Now, I noticed on page 7, you make a reference to the blackest clouds. Is that the type of petty thing that they're going to go after with this book?
That's hysterical. You know what? You're right. They're going to find anything. And if they didn't already, Mark, they're going to now. And, the dark clouds is a common term for eerie, for looming. It's not racist at all. And again, the great thing about the time in which we live that we didn't have before is that information technology has put the power back into our hands. You know, at the founding, we had to have communications committees, but it took weeks to print and to distribute the right side, our side, the counter. Now we can have online activists who can go on If You Dare, MSNBC's blog and comments, and set the record straight. And we can put out our own press releases and demand that fair reporters report it the way it is and say, we caught you doctoring it. That's not what Rick Perry said. And we can win if we do not give up. Yes, we're going to have to work harder. Wouldn't it be wonderful if MSNBC had said, you know, about Rick Perry's comments, is the debt really a dark cloud? It would be wonderful if they would keep it about the point, keep it about the platform, keep it about the message. But, folks, it's no surprise they're not going to. We are going to have to work twice as hard, twice as long, put out twice the effort, more the money, but it is worth it. We're not doing this for our selfish gain. We're doing it for future generations, and as our founding father said, for our children's grandchildren. And that's the spirit and the commitment and the self-sacrifice on which our country was founded, and that's what's going to make sure this second American Revolution enjoys the same victory and the same fate as the first American Revolution.
Now, when you say American Revolution, I'm sure there are some reporters on the left right now who are going to be saying, Christine O'Donnell is calling for a second American Revolution, and then they're going to imply that you want all of us to take up guns and hit the street and, fight against the government. When you say a second American Revolution, you're talking about winning at the ballot box.
Absolutely, and I'm talking about winning the war of ideas. You know, it was the foreign press who called the Tea Party movement, who called my defeat of the establishment the second American Revolution. Again, we've got that article online.
Thank goodness.
And we have to ask ourselves, are we going to enjoy the same fate as the first American Revolution, or are we going to do what happened in the second American the French Revolution, where they exchanged one form of tyranny for another?
One of the things I did back whenever you had the debate with Coons, and I'm in Texas. I didn't have the opportunity or the privilege to be able to vote for you, unfortunately. But that drove me so crazy, I carried a copy of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution in my pocket for about four weeks. And anytime someone said, Tea Party, that Christine O'Donnell, she's so stupid, she doesn't even know that separation of church and state, and I would just take it out and throw it on the desk or whatever and say, okay, show me where it's in there. Oh, well, right. You doctored this. It has to be in there. And it's amazing to me that so many people don't get that. And I had a historian on my show who said at the time that the Constitution came into play, about 50% of the states in America had an official state religion. Now, just to be clear on this, while the Constitution certainly prohibits America having an official American church, the way the church, we have the Church of England, it did not in any way preclude nativity scenes on the courthouse lawn, did it?
No, absolutely not. And there's such a misconception. And what we have to realize going forward is those who hate us are going to hate us. But there's a huge movement of middle-class Americans you know, everyday citizens who are curious and they want to learn this. So we have to learn when to shake the dust off our feet and move on, and when there's, you know, fertile soil and it's making an impact. And again, I get into detail about that in the Constitution. No, but one of the things, I was on a radio show the other day, and the caller called in and said, but you're so dumb, you couldn't even name a single Supreme Court judge, taking, again, out of context this misinformation that had perpetuated a question I was asked in one of the debates, where I was asked to name a recent Supreme Court decision that I disagreed with. But when you've got true constitutionalists serving on the Supreme Court, we have good decisions being handed down. So, again, they took that out of context, and I said we had to reach back at least 5 years to find one. The question was recent, and we had some wonderful decisions. But, again, we're going to have to work twice as hard, and I would just say to your listeners, you know, I hope the book Troublemaker is an inspiration. Please see it as the rallying cry that I hope it will be. I try to put a real honest story in it, try to close it with some practical policy, boiling it down to what I think in the chapter called The Freedom Food Chain, what I think is a compelling argument for why government is too big and why government should remain local. Please share it with your friends, and do not lose heart. Do not give up. And I tried to write the book in such a way that it was as if I was just telling a good friend, sitting on a couch with a cup of tea. This is what happened. Here are my thoughts. Here's my reflection on moving forward. So I really hope that you enjoy it. I hope that I can come back again and answer some questions. And we're going all over the country. Again, the schedule is on troublemakerbook.com. Come on out to one of the events. We're going to be in North Jersey tonight, in Atlanta, Texas, Phoenix.
Where are you going to be in Texas? I'm actually in Texas right now.
Good, good. Dallas and Houston. And then we might be coming back to a couple other stops in the fall. But come on out. I would love to talk to you about this stuff. Answer your questions in person and just keep inspiring each other.
I'll try to make the Houston event. I'd love to meet you in person.
Oh, good.
I'm only about I'm about 100 miles northwest of Houston in College Station, Texas, home of Texas A&M University, the George Bush Library, and that's a short drive for me. So I'd love to come meet you in person and maybe get my copy of the book autographed.
Good. Maybe your listeners can send you some questions, we can do another interview and answer their questions and, you know, things like that.
I would love to do that, but before I let you go, I've got one more question for you, and
uh-huh.
I think it's a question that's on a lot of people's minds. I would love to see you run again. Is there a future political run in Christine O'Donnell's future?
Well, you know, as I say, I talk about the decision-making process that went into my runs in the past. I honestly don't know. Right now, my priority is, I talk about in the book these false claims that not only the former Republican leadership filed against me, but the Democrats, through this group called CREW, filed false claims with a perjured affidavit, not just with the FEC, but with the U.S. Attorney's Office. And they did it right after I won the primary so that the headlines would read U.S. Attorney's Office investigating Christine O'Donnell. Now, I have since been cleared of all of their charges. The U.S. Attorney's Office saw it for the fraud that it was, but not until after we wasted FBI resources. It was fraud and abuse, and CREW knowingly filed that false claim, and we have proof that she perjured herself. So what we're doing right now, and if your listeners can help us with this, we are countering their claims. We are filing counter complaints of our own, because Mark, none of us can wrongly accuse Barack Obama of rape or wrongly accuse your neighbor just because you don't like them of burglary, have the police investigate it. If they found out it wasn't true, it was just because you had a personal vendetta, you would face consequences of your own. Yet Melanie Sloan and crew have gotten away with that because usually the candidates like Sarah Palin, like me, that they've gone after, are just so exhausted, so financially tapped out that you go, I'm just so glad that, you know, that it's over. But they picked on the wrong person. I didn't earn the title troublemaker for nothing. We are filing counter complaints against the George Soros funded group crew. And if you go on ChristinePack.com, I would really appreciate your help if you can contribute. Because again, we're going up a group that has George Soros, the ultra leftist billionaire, backing them. We need the support of the Tea Party movement to help us. But as long as we have the resources, I will not back down from this fight.
Well, you've certainly earned your title troublemaker. And I think, and I'm being honest, always am with my authors. I haven't finished the book, but I am into it. And I want to say something else. You have succeeded. If your goal was to make the reader feel as if they were sitting on a couch with you, listening to you tell this story, you have succeeded, because that is exactly the way I felt. There was a beautiful simplicity about this book, and I say that as a very, very positive compliment. It reminds me in many ways of the writing of Mark Twain, who was one of the first authors in American history to simply speak to people in their own language without trying to impress people with the construction of their sentences. It's just beautifully written, and I'll let you in on a secret. I'm half Sicilian, so as you shared some of the stories from your childhood, not only did I find those beautiful memories from your childhood, but it caused me to relive some very similar beautiful moments from my childhood. My mother's side of the family, like your mother's side of the family, is Italian, or more specifically Sicilian, and it was just, I mean, I really felt like I got to know you as I was turning the pages of this book. I would encourage everyone to go out and get a copy of it, or wait until Christine's tour comes to your town and get a copy and then get it autographed. But it's just a wonderfully written book, and the honesty of the book, the honesty of the story just comes through loud and clear. I mean, it was just a great job, and I got to tell you, this isn't just a good book for an author making a first-time effort. This is a good book, a great book, period, and I wish you much success with it. You asked if you could come back. I assume the question was rhetorical. Of course you can come back. I would love to have you back next time without the technical difficulties caused by me, and I would love to take this farther and maybe have our listeners send in some questions that they can ask you. We are almost out of time, but you rattled off a lot of web pages and a lot of places that people could go. Could you kind of take those one by one? We're going to put them all up on our website, teapartypowerhour.com, along with a link to this interview. But if you could just kind of review that with us and tell us the different websites you've got up and where, you know, people can find them.
Sure. ChristinePack.com, ChristinePine, PAC, PAC.com. We'll have all the information about crew. It's got my email address. I try to check it regularly. I don't always, but I do get the emails that if you email me from ChristinePack.com. And then also TroublemakerBook.com has all the links to where you can buy the book, all the discounts, so that you can comparative shop right there. If you want to get the book and read it before I come to your town so that I can answer your questions and talk to you about the book. And then TroublemakerBook.com/chapter notes is where all of the endnotes and footnotes about every claim that I make, except whether or not I'm a direct descendant of Charles Carroll. We're still waiting for our naysayers to confirm that for me.
But we've got sticky goods worked out.
All the other things are there.
Yeah.
right, we got the sticky goods worked out.
Christine, you have been an absolute delight to have
Thank
on the show
you,
today. I would love to have you back sometime. And I plan on, unless some major event gets in the way, I plan to come to Houston and meet you and get my book signed there. So
Great. And let's see if we can do another interview where we're there and your listeners can send you the questions and we can take them right then and there.
That can be arranged. Absolutely no problem. Once again,
okay,
Christine,
great.
Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you, Mark.
And that is it for today's show. Remember to tune in next week when Margaret Hoover will discuss her new book, American Individualism.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.